better. Later on, when physicians began to understand that maybe blood isn't something you just remove, they still couldn't get away from the mystical associations. So they adopted a philosophy called vitalism, which meant that maybe blood is a nutrient, maybe you don't just have to drain it to make somebody healthy, but it still carries the characteristics of the creature in which it flows. So the blood of a lion was thought to be brave, and the blood of a sheep was thought to be meek, and so on.
When you say that blood was one of the four humors, what were the other three?
Let's see, it was choler, phlegm, bile, and blood. And that was the Greek system in which the humors of the body were thought to mirror the elements of the universe that kept everything in balance. But I should say that bloodletting began even before the Greeks. There's hieroglyphic evidence that the Egyptians did bloodletting as well. It's just something people always did. Oddly, there was never any evidence that it did any good.
Before we get to bloodletting, what is in blood?
Blood, that's a good question. Blood can...
I didn't expect a laugh out of that line.
No, well, it's funny. You know, nobody's asked that before. I'm sorry. Nobody's actually asked that. Blood is a fascinating liquid. There's red cells, those little red cells that carry hemoglobin, which is the molecule that carries oxygen. There's plasma, and that's that sort of amber-colored, clear liquid. And if you let a pint of blood sit for a long time, the red cells settle to the bottom, and then the plasma is like the top 60%. And that's a protein solution with antibodies and other proteins and water and salts. And then in between is this little buffy coat, and that has platelets. And those are very sensitive bodies that aid in clotting, and there's also white cells in that section as well.
Here comes another laugh line, just so we have the basics.
Sorry.
What are the actual functions that blood serves in the body?
Okay. First of all, blood carries oxygen and nutrients to all of the organs and all of the cells. That's probably the most important things it does. It keeps our tissue alive. And the other thing it does is carry immune agents and antibodies to fight disease. The other thing it does that a lot of people don't think about is it's a hydrostatic fluid. And that is, if you keep enough blood and plasma in the veins and arteries, it keeps them full so that fluids could move around. And one of the things that happened, interestingly enough, they discovered in World War I, is when people started running out of blood, they would die from shock, not so much because they lost the red cells and the oxygen, but just when you didn't have enough of this pressure in the vessels, they collapsed and it kind of cut off the circulation to your organs.
Okay, well, let's get to bloodletting now. I mean, for centuries, one of the curative things was believed to be draining the person of a lot of blood, which goes so against everything that we know now. Why was that believed to be curative?
Nobody really knows how it started. Some people theorize that seeing women in menstrual cycles perhaps thought they were relieved by bleeding, but nobody really knows how it got started. But it did get started, and people did it for about 2,500 years.
That's a very long time.
It's a very long time, especially when there was really never any evidence that it did any good. And one of the interesting things about doctors before the 19th century is they didn't really keep records. In the early part of the 19th century, they kept billing records, but they never kept records saying, we tried this on this patient and this was the result. So they were very anecdotal about it, and they always interpreted whatever happened to their benefit. So if they let someone's blood out and miraculously they got better despite the doctor's efforts, they would say, well, it cured them. If they let blood out until the person died, they say, it's a shame that they died because we almost cured him.
So was there like a science to bloodletting? Like if you had one disease, would they take a pint of blood, and another disease, two pints of blood? Was it leeches for one disease and incisions for another?
They were absolutely fetishistic about the exactitude of bloodletting. And there was, it's interesting, there was a Greek school of bloodletting, which say if you were bleeding from your left nostril, they would bleed from your left elbow to stop it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the Roman and Greek empires fell and sort of the seat of learning went to the Arabic world, they sort of felt the opposite. They called it revulsive bloodletting. So if you were bleeding from your left nostril, in order to stop that, they bleed you from your right elbow. There were all sorts of calendars and charts and specificity about how to bleed in case of this or this, when to use leashes, when to use a lancet. They had all sorts of wonderful, zany devices. One was called a schnapper, and it was created by a Viennese inventor, and it was actually a bunch of little blades. And if you lacked the skill to slice with a lancet, you'd put this